Good evening, everyone. I'm Pam Stack, your host, and you're listening to Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Tonight, I am welcoming back to my studio author J.J. Hensley, who now has a fourth or fifth book. I'm going to have to ask him about that. That is really terrific. It's called Bolt Action Remedy. JJ comes by his writing chops, honestly. He's been a cop, and he's been a federal cop, and he's worked for the federal government in a law enforcement capacity in one way or the other. We'll learn more about him in just a few minutes, but I'm pleased to welcome back to the show author JJ Hensley. Hi, JJ. How are you?
Good, Pam.
Welcome back. I guess this
Thank
is
you.
Kind of an odd time to talk to you. You are in process. You're doing an intrastate move, and you are actually on the road right now. True?
I am. Unfortunately for me, I'm getting a late start out of the Pittsburgh area. Fortunately, though, that means I've got a good phone signal for a good amount of time.
Well, then we're lucky. It was meant to be then. And are you moving for work? Are you moving for cultural differences, you know, new location for the fun of it, or kind of a little bit of everything?
A little bit of everything. I'm looking forward to the move. I'm moving mostly for work. I'm still with the federal government, have been for 17 years, I guess. I've been working for an agency called National Background Investigations Bureau, and we have our training. I work in the training division now, and we have our training academy and everything here in Western Pennsylvania. But now I've taken a job with the U.S. Marshals Service down at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center, or what people call FLETC, which is down in Brunswick, Georgia, which is about an hour south of Savannah, Georgia. So moving just outside of Savannah.
Oh, terrific. Well, you're going to have a great time there. It's a beautiful city, and I know you've got an absolutely gorgeous daughter. I'm sure she'll enjoy the change, too. You will not have those frigid winters, so that's a good thing.
Right. We've already had frost here.
Oh, wow. You know, the air conditioning's on at my house, so I'm just saying Southwest Florida has a lot of appeal for me right now.
Right.
JJ, when we first spoke a few years ago, your first book, Resolve, had just come out. It was just a terrific, twisty, windy mystery that, you know, really there were so many different red herrings throughout the book. When you finally came to the conclusion of the book, it was kind of stunning. And we had an interesting conversation then. You said that you and your wife used to ride to work and listen to audiobooks while you drove into work. And do you remember telling me that story?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was – we were in the Washington,
D.C.
area.
Can you relay it? Yeah. Please relay that story.
Yeah, we were living in the Washington, D.C. area, and we were living in Northern Virginia, and I was commuting into D.C. every day, and my wife had a pretty sizable commute into Manassas. And we would be driving different directions, but we got hooked on audiobooks, and we'd always been crime fiction fans, so we were reading it as well. But we started sharing audiobooks. So back then there were no digital downloads. It was all CDs and tapes. So,
sure.
So we would, one of us would listen to disc one and then pass it over to the other the next day. And we would go through it that way. And then the evenings we would talk about what we liked, what we didn't like about the book, and what we would, have preferred the author do differently. And this went on for a better part of 4.5 years. And then my wife, one day as we were sitting on our deck looking over our little postage stamp of a yard, as you tend to get in the D.C. area.
Right.
She said, this is back before we had any kids, so we actually had time to talk. She said, you should try to write a book. And, being a male, I didn't listen for years. But once I got out of, I was working for the Secret Service at the time, as an agent with them. And then once I took the job, I changed to be an instructor for for NBIB, here in Western Pennsylvania. I was working 8 hours a day, and I wasn't traveling the world and working shift work. I finally did come around to try to write a book, and I sat down and cranked out the first draft to resolve in about 3 months. And then things kind of, it did well, as you know, and got good reviews and some awards, including Authors on the Air, one of the best books of the year.
Right.
Thank you very much, Pam Sack.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
and that helped take off for now three more full novels since then, and more on the way.
Congratulations. I mean,
no, thank you.
And this was not something you had aspired to do necessarily. It was just because you were reading and listening to books, and I think that, you know, we've talked about this before. When you listen to a book versus you're reading it with your eyeballs, you really get a different twist on a book. You inhale it in a different way. So it had not always been your lifelong dream to be a writer, had it been?
No, not at all. I couldn't imagine writing fiction until basically my wife dared me to. I'd written, you know, countless threat assessments and intelligence reports and
right.
You know, technical security assessments and all these things that certainly were not they were criminal justice related, but they weren't fiction by any stretch of the imagination. So it was more of just that being such a big influence in my life, reading crime fiction all my life, and then listening to it. And I think you're right. There's something to listening to audiobooks where that you especially if it's a very good narrator. It helps you do what I tend to do anyway, which is I'm going to envision a movie in your mind, and
yes.
you can hear the I remember the first time I got when Resolve was made into an audiobook and I listened to it. It was so strange to hear my own words being spoken by an actor. And it became very difficult for me because I thought I didn't write that in that tone of voice, but I didn't write it in any tone of voice. I just wrote the words down, and then the actor, interpreted what the scene was. And I think that's part of one of the great things about it is people are always, they always have that their own tone and their own twist on the author's words.
So, before we talk about the book, I want to talk about where you are now versus where you were when you wrote Resolve, because now you're four books and probably more in, since I'm assuming there are more books on the hopper for you, and you're probably writing. What have you learned, one, about writing that you know now that you didn't know then?
I learned that it's okay to not follow all the rules that experienced writers, established writers put down for you. I've just met, and that's not a slight on any other writer, because I think everybody has to do what's right for them. But I've
right.
come across so many authors who, you know, oh, you have to outline, or you have to write every day, and all the. And I mean, I'm talking about great writers who I hesitate to ever disagree with, like Stephen King or Lee Child.
Right.
And,
right.
and they have these wonderful rules that absolutely wouldn't work for me. So I think over time, with some experience and you know some moderate success in the field, I've become confident enough to say, you know, hey, that's great. I love that advice. It's just not for me.
Right. It works for you, but my way is working for me so far. So,
right. And, who knows? Maybe I would be on the New York Times bestseller list, number one book, if I listened to them, but I'm going to be stubborn and not listen because that's who I am.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true. You know, because like you said, you have to kind of find your own. Yeah, it could happen, but if it was going to happen, it was going to happen. And so if that's what it took, writing at the same time and a certain amount and being real disciplined and outlining, then there would be more people on the New York Times bestseller list. So while it works for one, and there are other authors who, by the way, are on the New York Times bestseller list who don't outline and don't, write every day. It's just that's all there is to
right.
it. So I think you're right. There are no hard and fast rules as a for writing. But you've created your own rules, and it's obviously working for you. Are you a more savvy writer, do you think, stylistically, with the craft? Or do you think you're, better, and can you see the differences in your writing?
I'm too close to it. I don't see it. I've never claimed to be a great writer. I think I'm a good storyteller. I think I'm a good writer until I read like Dennis Lange, and then I'm like, I am a horrible writer. I'm the worst writer on the face of the earth. I should be doing this with finger paint. But I think that the feedback that I've gotten over time, because at least here in the Pittsburgh area, I've kind of grown a bit of a following in throughout Western Pennsylvania, which of course now I'm leaving. So yeah, bye guys.
You're just going to create a new one, right?
Right. I got to work on the Savannah crowd, I guess.
That's okay. It's a great reading crowd there, so it'll be good. It'll be good.
I'm looking forward to it. But the feedback I've gotten over the time is, you know, I wrote Measure Twice and I thought, okay, I think this is pretty good. And there were a lot of people who surprised me and thought it was better than Resolve. And then Chalk's Outline was my third book. And I really didn't like it. I finished it and I was about 5 minutes away from calling the publisher and asking them. I was up against my deadline and I said, I really just let me out of the contract. I don't even want this published. And my wife talked me out of it. And I got emails last week, people who had just discovered Chalk's Outline, which is the third of that unorthodox trilogy between Resolve, Measure Twice, and Chalk's Outline. And the people saying that that was their favorite up until Bold Action Remedy, which is my new one. And that always surprises me because I'm a terrible judge of my own work because I saw Chalk's Outline as being just a total flop and people really liked it. And then I got nervous because I always thinking my book is going to be terrible. It's going to suck. And then when Bold Action Remedy, when I got it landed with Down and Out Books, I thought, okay, I think this is good. I think this is my best work. And that made me nervous because I think, well, if I thought the other one stuck and people liked it, then now I'm thinking this one's good. They're going to hate it. So I just got to get out of my own head. I really psyched myself out with that.
You are definitely a writer. I will tell you that when you have all these conflicting things going on. The thing that I noticed, you can tell that your books between Resolve, Measure Twice, and Chalk's Outline are very different than going into Bolt Action Remedy, and particularly because I think this is going to be your first really series that you're starting. This is Trevor Galloway 1. But it's also so different because the cover is very vibrant. It's not anything like your other kind of really black and red covers that kind of identified those of being a particular style. So, you know, and your reviews are spectacular. I mean, you get 5-star reviews across the board. So congratulations on that. And for those of you listening, two of the books that we were just talking about, Chalk's Outline particularly, is a special right now in Kindle. You can get it for $2.99, and it's, believe me, worth it, as is Measure Twice. JJ's given me the honor of reading all of his books a little bit early, and they're really, 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 really good, including Bolt Action Remedy. I highly recommend it. So let's talk about Trevor Galloway and where this story comes from. I'm assuming, and you kind of alluded to, that your job has given you a lot of fodder, or at least inspiration, for some of the stories that you're telling. Do you typically use some of the knowledge you have from your background as a law enforcement person and military in your stories? I imagine it's useful, but do you draw from your own experience?
I do. I try to incorporate it. Probably mostly to make it authentic and avoid the tendency to go Hollywood in books. And what I mean is where you have like NCIS, where you have Abby Shudo,
right,
who can do everything. She's a forensic genius, computer genius, or the show Castle, which was my guilty pleasure when it was on, even though it was just so dumb sometimes. But they always had to arrest like 3 people. And the third one, they wouldn't get it right till the third one, which of course they would have been sued, you know, 3 times for false arrest.
Right. Every single time. Every week they'd be getting sued.
Right. And I make sure that, hey, if there is a shooting, they don't go and have a beer and then go out and get more shootouts. If they're cops, you're on administrative suspension. you take your gun away. I try to use the authenticity, and DNA is not processed in an hour, thanks CSI. And all of those little things to give it an authentic feel and make sure that people understand what a real interview interrogation one of the main things I do is anybody that's law enforcement related or former, I try to make very competent, because the shortcut that many authors take, and it's completely understandable, is if their main character in particular is not a law enforcement officer, they make the police officers or agents, they make them either apathetic, incompetent, or corrupt. And they do that because you need a reason for your main character to stay involved in the story. So, if the cops were doing their job and everything was perfect, they could just sit back and, have a drink and sit on the couch, and the cops would go solve the crime and you wouldn't have a story.
Right.
I incorporate it for that reason.
Let's talk about the book and tell us about Trevor Galloway, please.
Okay. Bold Action Remedy was a departure for me, as you mentioned. Not just because of the cover, which is a longer story about the whole cover, the cover development, how all the books came about. But I expected Down and Out Books to go with Black and Red because that's what my previous publishers had done. And then when they came back and showed me that cover, I was like, that's it. That's fantastic. I love the cover. But it is about Trevor Galloway is a former Pittsburgh narcotics detective who, through a series of events, mostly outside of his control, had to leave the police department. He's got some addiction issues. Again, not all of his own doing. And he gets hired to investigate a cold case in central Pennsylvania, in Centre County, Pennsylvania. And it's the death of a prominent businessman who was gunned down on his own estate in the dead of winter. And when Galloway arrives, he finds out that the crime can't be that hard to solve. There can only be a very small suspect pool because the way it was committed was by somebody who could ski and shoot extremely well. And then when the local chief of police, Sally Colby, takes him next door where she believes the killer resides or is around, he discovers that it's a biathlon training camp. And for anybody who isn't familiar with what biathlon is, it's a sport that here in the U.S. we're more familiar with just during the Olympics, the Winter Olympics, where people ski and shoot extremely well, just an amazing skill set. So obviously his suspect pool grows exponentially at that point.
Boy, does it ever. Right.
Right. And he's got some problems from the past. He thinks he's being pursued by a killer only known as the Lithuanian, who would like to take Galloway's eyes, and he'd prefer to keep those.
You're using my heritage there, by the way. I just want you to know you're using my heritage. I don't know any of the Lithuanians who want
to
take.
I've been
You've
to
been
Vilnius.
There?
I love it. Loved
okay.
Vilnius. Craziest cab ride I've ever been on was in Vilnius.
Oh, you've met my mom then.
It was an adventure. I think I was all my years in the Secret Service. I never feared for my life more than I did during that cab ride.
That's funny. I like this character a lot because, you've said he has his issues. He's a little bit flawed and maybe a lot more flawed as we learn more about him. Was it ever your intention to make this a serious character? Was that what you intended to do? Or did you find that you grew to like the character so much that you wanted to build some more stories around him?
I think once I got about halfway through, I thought, I want to keep this guy around. I like this guy. And then I finished book two, which is going to come out next October, called Record Scratch. And I thought, okay, I still want to keep him around. And then we'll see what happens with book three. I just started writing it. And I tend to I don't want to say that the ideas get stale, but I think in general, and you know Ed Amar, I heard him say the same thing.
Of course.
So he said the same thing that I was thinking, which is, you know, two or three books, you know, for one character sometimes is perfect. Sometimes it just
right.
needs to be a trilogy or a pair. Now, don't get me wrong. If you know somebody wants to pay me $5 million to write 20 Galloway books, then you're going to get 20 Galloway books.
You go. You'll figure it out, right? Right.
Right. Right. Yeah. Forget stale ideas. I can buy new ideas. I'm going to do at least two or three books. There's definitely two, and a third one on the way for Galloway, and then we'll see. Sometimes I like change of pace, but I also break up the monotony with short stories and anthologies
right.
and things of that nature. So that kind of keeps the ideas fresh as well.
Now, would you ever write a female lead, and would you be comfortable doing that?
I would. I would definitely want to. I'm probably a little gun shy about it, only because I live with two females and I don't understand them. So I don't know if I'm particularly qualified to write as a female lead, because there are so many things that my wife points out when she proofreads. And she's like, no woman does that. No woman would do that. And I had a woman crying in a manuscript. I had the woman crying, and then I said she wiped her eyes, and she was at work. And my wife said, take that out. I said, why? She's crying. She goes, because she just smeared her mascara. She's going to dab it with a tissue, but she's not going to wipe her eyes. I'm like, really? She's like, yeah, really. And I think in Chalk's Outline, I messed up something with a pregnancy test. I had a female take a pregnancy test, and I'm like, you know, it's peeing on a stick. How can I mess that up? Well, apparently that should be done in the morning, and I had it being done in the afternoon. I'm like, come on, I don't. I'm so gun shy about that. I figure if I do something stupid with a male character, people are going to say, well, yeah, it's a guy, it's dumb. But you know, I got to be careful with writing a female character.
Well, I, there is a little bit of license you get to take, because it is fiction after all. And quite honestly, I read enough cross-genre that when women are peeing on a pregnancy stick, it happens at all points in during the day. So we don't really hold that against you too much. But what I think is most important, and what I found when I read a male writer writing from a woman's POV and vice versa, is that you really have to be cautious of the dialogue, and because men and women speak in different ways. I don't know a lot of guys who are going to say, oh, how lovely
right.
your house
right.
is. They'd say, what a cool place, you know, or nice place you got there. So those things. So my next question is kind of a natural lead-in, and I always like to ask my guests this. Do you read your dialogue out loud, or have someone read it to you?
No. You know what? I've never thought about it. I probably mouth it to myself. I don't actually say it out loud. I play it like a movie in my head, as I mentioned, so I picture it all usually when I'm driving or something. And not only do I want him to say it in this way or for it to come across this way, but I want there to be a deliberate pause, you know, and then, or maybe it's a deliberate spacing choice where, you know, I space down to the next line and then say one word or something like that. So I think
right.
through the minutiae of that, but I don't actually mouth it out loud. I figure
it's interesting
figure
to
I'm
me prob- because you're the one who's the audio guy. You're the one who hears books versus reads
right.
them. And so I find that very, you know, interesting that you don't actually, like, your wife doesn't read back some of your dialogue to you, because as you said yourself, you've just acknowledged when you listen to your books on audio, it sounds completely different than the way you wrote it.
Right. Maybe I should try that. I think I avoid it because I'm scared, because I use my voice memo thing when I'm coming up with ideas on my iPhone. I have a voice memo.
Right.
function
right, right.
And
right.
and I know that I'm not always alone when I talk into the phone and say something like hide the body in the swamp, and somebody's overhearing me, and I'm going to go to jail for this at some point, but when I'm home alone, it's probably safe for me to do this.
Yeah, well, it's just I'm curious about it, because when I read particularly interesting prose and narrative is so good. I do read it out loud, not in every book, but there are some sequences of dialogue or descriptive narrative that are just so pleasing to my eye. I want to hear it. So I was surprised because you're the audio guy. You know, this is how you started writing because you were listening to someone tell you, say, a book. Curious, have you ever listened to a book or read one or started to read and then switched over to the audio? I wonder if you would feel differently had you been reading a book versus listening to a book.
I don't know if I've switched over mid-book, but I have gone back and listened to an audio of when I've read. That can be an interesting experience. Like the Vince Flynn books, which I love, all the Mitch Rapp books and that whole series. I read many of those and then started getting them again later on audio. But of course they were being read by George Goodell, who's like maybe the best narrator for fiction ever. But I do find dramatic differences in some of them, and it makes me feel differently about the book. I'm trying to think of Joseph Finder's narrator, whose name I don't think it's Scott Brick, but the gentleman who narrates Joseph Finder's books, I think.
Oh, Joe Finder. Joe Finder. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. He was just on a panel with me at VoucherCon, by the way, and super nice guy. But I've done that with his books before, and it can have a little bit of a different feel to it. The Nick Heller character that he uses is in the books, it can become very serious at times, but the sarcasm and the humor comes across a little bit more in the audio version. So I think that's probably a good example of where the tone can change depending on if you're reading it or listening to it.
Yeah, I wonder of the ones that you listened to and you said, I could do better than that. You know, I could write that story. I wonder if you had read the book, would you have felt the same way? You know, I'm just curious, and obviously there's no way to know, but it's just an observation that I wonder if reading it would have dissuaded you from your, you know, I mean, I'm glad that you started writing. Obviously, I like your book. So, but it was just—it's just an interesting dynamic to hear it, you know, from different ways. Let's talk about the next book. You've already written, and this book, or you're finishing up. It'll come out next year. And have you started at least thinking about the third book?
Yeah, I've been about 10,000 words into it for a while.
Wow.
I need to get back into it once I get moved down to Georgia. But that one, I've got a concept for it, because you know how a lot of my books have concepts with Resolve. It was every chapter was a mile of the marathon, Measure Twice, the 12 steps of addiction recovery. There's 12 chapters for that.
Right.
And I did a little bit with Bold Action Remedy, divided into five parts for five targets for Biathlon. This one,
right.
Record Scratch is the next one. It's going to have a chapter for each song on a vinyl album. So I'm toying around with the concept of the third one. I think it's going to be a film strip, 35 millimeter, and each frame of the photo is going to have its own chapter, essentially, or each frame that contains a photo. So I'm getting into it.
You've really separated yourself out, JJ, by doing that. And I remember you telling me about how you titled each of your books. It's really brilliant, by the way. I love it.
Oh, thank you. That's my internal outline, because I don't outline ahead of time. So I have to have a structure built in sometimes to the books themselves to keep me on track.
Well, it makes sense for you, and so that's a good thing. So let me ask you this, and then I'm going to let you go because I know you're on the road. I know it's dark out, and our time is almost up. But one of the things I want to know is, do you spend time thinking an awful lot? Oh, we've got a caller, too. Hang on, let's grab the call first.
Sure.
Hi, you're live on the air. Who's this?
Hi, I would say, oh, how lovely, but then you would know it was a feminine caller. Is this a Secret Service guy Is this the J.J. Hensley who fled
it
the Pittsburgh Steelers?
I'm not answering now. This must be the infamous Mel Callahan's voice.
Why? Yes, it is, and I do listen to my own dialogue. But I'm calling for the star of the show here, and this has been a wonderful, wonderful interview. For someone who doesn't outline, you certainly break down where your mind is going. But my question is, 5 years from now, no holds barred, where could your writing take you? Anything?
Oh, well, it'd be writing full time, which, you know, I think for most writers, you know, is the dream, is to be able to do it and make a good living at it. I don't know very many people who aren't named, you know, David Baldacci, who could do that. You know, it would be great. Fortunately for me, I love my work. I love what I do for the federal government and all that. So I'm not, you know, desperate to stop doing that. But I think to be able to do this for a living and to be able to really dedicate yourself to not just the writing part of it, but, you know, all the stuff that a lot of the bigger authors do, the book tours and the marketing aspect of it, and the amazing time that they spend on travel and things like that. That would be fantastic to be able to do something like that.
Well, since your writing is so good and since you love your work, seems you've already got your life all set up. Just keep going to BoucherCon and running into people that you take photos with, and you'll be all set.
Well, thanks. I'm moving to Georgia, and BoucherCon's in Florida next year, so I'm looking forward to that.
Miss Kate Pilarczyk is going to be there. She's you know, family to the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, so we're kind of womb to tomb on that one, right, girl?
There's no other radio network than Authors on the Air. I'm going to leave you guys close off, but you're one
Thank
of the
you.
Good guys. I'm glad you're out there, both of you. Bye.
Thanks,
Thank
Kate.
You.
Good night. And for those of you who don't know, that's Kate Pilarczyk. She's written a book called The Damp Fedora, which is excellent. And by all means, go and check that out, too. JJ, I wish you and your family so much success, safe travels, and I'm going to see you, I don't know, hopefully I'll see you after your book is out and I can, you know, kind of gush about your next book. But if not, I'll see you either at Thriller Fest and then at BoucherCon next year and, you know, maybe someplace in between.
Right, I should be at Thriller Fest for the Night of the Flood.
Yeah, there you go. Right. It'll be fun,
yeah,
right?
We have the anthology coming out, The Night of the Flood, in March
right.
through Down and Out Books, and a lot of great authors on that one.
I know, it's great. As a matter of fact, let me go ahead and take a peek at that because I have that on your author page on Amazon, and we were talking. So let me just mention this, by the way. This is 14 authors who are will take you to the fictional town of Everton with crime fiction stories, obviously. And it's really, really an interesting read. I hope that everyone goes when this book releases and you go and spend your money because it's definitely worth it. It'll be out in March. J.J. Hensley, military guy, cop, federal guy, husband, father, all-around good dude. Thank you for being with me tonight. I really appreciate it. And good luck. And we'll talk again soon, yes?
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it, and I hope to talk to you very soon.
All right. Bye-bye, JJ.
Bye.
Okay, and then that's the show. Tomorrow I will be the guest on a Skype conversation at a library in Long Island talking about the Authors on the Air book Betrayed. It's an anthology for a cause. The proceeds from 22 short stories about kick-ass crime survivors go to the Naples Shelter for Abused Women and Children. I hope you'll look on Amazon or wherever ebooks are sold to purchase that. Friday morning, I'm going to talk to the organizer of the AIDS Ride South Africa for a short period of time, and then go to our website, look under the shows to see what is coming up in the network. Have a glorious evening, everyone, and thank you for being here, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.